And I was just a very violent person. I had no remorse, and I just did a lot of things without thinking, you know, without going in and without listening to my conscience. And yeah, that landed me in and out of jail many times.
Welcome to the Greg Allen Podcast. Thanks for joining us, where we talk about life. I truly believe that everyone has a story to tell and a lesson to teach, and that's what this show is all about. So if you're enjoying the show, please head over and leave us a review. It helps us connect, inspire, and help more people like you. And I just want to do a big shout out to you for taking the time to grow and improve. So good on you. Keep doing what you're doing, and good luck in life. Is it Carlo? How do you pronounce your name?
So it's Carlos Berganti.
Carlos Berganti.
Yeah, but if you really want to know my full name, it's Telofio Carlos Artatis Berganti. My parents didn't want to leave anybody out of there, so they put everybody's name on mine.
Awesome. That's so cool. We're going to kick it off. That's the start. I'm saying I'm going to start it. All right, so thanks for joining us, man. It's really excited to have you here and to tell your story and to get your message out there.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you for having me on here and letting me share my story. I do appreciate that, because I think it needs to be heard, and I think the next step is to, you know, pay it forward, you know?
Yeah.
So hopefully that's the objective here.
Yeah, cool. So before we started, you were talking about you've got your Brazilian tea there. Tell me about your Brazilian tea. What is it?
Yeah, so what it's called is it's called chimarrão. I don't know if you can see that there. It's in a little kind of a wooden cup here. They call it a bomba, which is a straw here. But it's basically mate. So they put mate in here. I don't know if you can see that there. It's green stuff.
Yep.
And they put it half of it's in the cup here. And they fill the other end up with hot water, you know, and you just sip on it. And everybody kind of does that. It keeps you going through the day, and it's just chai mate, you know. It's just mate, and that's how they drink it over here.
Yeah.
They drink it out of this. It's kind of traditional here in the southern part of Brazil.
Yeah.
So cool. I got hooked on it, and it gives me the energy throughout the day. It's not like the caffeine high you get when you drink coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. It's good for you.
Awesome. Awesome, man. So whereabouts in Brazil do you live?
So I live in the state of Santa Catarina, which is one of the states in the southern part of Brazil. But it's an island off of that state called Florianópolis. Beautiful place. They kind of refer it to the Hawaii of South America. So yeah, it's very beautiful here, and I've been living here for almost 8 years.
Okay, where did you live before that? Is that like, did you grow up in Brazil? Born in Brazil?
No, I did not. So my parents are Filipino. They migrated over to the United States. I was born in California, and from California, you know, we lived all over the United States. We lived in Chicago. And finally settled and lived most of my life in the United States in Virginia.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, where I went to high school. That's where I went to college. That's where a lot of growing up and a lot of the events that we're probably going to talk about happened over there. So, yeah, that's primarily where I grew up until my late 20s.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Nice. So tell us a little bit more about your story and you know, what brings you here today? Like what's brought you to the point where you want to give back and to pay it forward?
So yeah, so a little bit about my story here. You know, my parents, like I said, immigrated over to the United States. We did not have a lot of money, you know. There was always financial difficulties growing up. That was like a major thing. But also to top it off, my father was also a drug addict and an alcoholic. You know, he was very abusive, both physically and mentally, to myself and, you know, my brothers and sisters and my mother, too. You know, so it was a very difficult time growing up during these times. you know, seeing all that happen and all that happening to myself, on top of, you know, the issues with my father and not being financially stable, you know, and try to make it in the United States, you know, that's like the American dream. And, so eventually my parents split up. My mom had the courage to split up from my father, and, we didn't get any support from him at all, you know, so it was just my mom and the three of us. And, you know, I saw my mom go through a lot of things, you know, working several jobs day and night, just to keep us afloat. And, you know, of course, throughout all of this, I was kind of like doing my own thing, you know, and the only father figure that I didn't have a father figure at that time, but the only one that I knew of at that time was my father. And he was not a good man. You know, he taught me a lot of bad things, honestly. And I kind of followed in his footsteps. You know, I found myself following in his footsteps. I started drinking early on in my life. I started using drugs very early on in my life. I started hanging around the wrong crowd early on in my life. I started doing a lot of things that he was doing, you know, and I found myself going into that. And of course, that got me into a lot of trouble with the law. You know, I got in trouble from the age of 17 to almost like 24, 25, I was like in and out of jail, getting in trouble, you know, mainly for stealing. Of course, comes with stealing, you lie a lot too. So I was a big time liar. Also, my biggest vice, my biggest downfall was I love to drink. My dad was an alcoholic, and you know, I started my drinking career very early. So I started drinking a lot myself. And that brought a lot of aggression out in me, resentment. And I was just a very violent person. I had no remorse, and I just did a lot of things without thinking, you know, without going in and without listening to my conscience. And yeah, that landed me in and out of jail many times, until I finally got tired of it. You know, I finally got tired of it. I got tired of seeing my mother cry. And one of my last stints in jail, there was a intense therapy program, which I went through, that really dug deep in the root cause and why I am who I am and why I do the things that I do. And, it came all the way down to, my father. You know, my father was a big influence on the path that I kind of chose at that time. You know, I always looked up to him when he was there. Of course, you know, he's my father, and you know, every boy always looks up to their father, no matter what. You know,
yeah.
And the things that he was portraying was not the things that you should be portraying to your child. You know. And the things that he would talk about and exemplify were the wrong things, you know. So I thought, yeah, this is how you're supposed to be a man. This is how you're supposed to be. And so that's kind of how I grew up, and that's kind of the path that I followed until I got tired of it, you know. And I went through an intense therapy program. I found out the root cause for a lot of my actions was my upbringing, my father. And I made it my life's mission, basically, to not be like my father, to be the exact opposite of him. You know, I want to be the best son possible, an example for my younger brothers and sisters, you know, the best father, just the best person that I can be in this lifetime. So he's actually my motivating factor right now, you know. Yeah. Because I wanted to be the opposite. I realized the road that I was taking at that time, and it was time for a change. I just got tired of it.
Yeah, man. Oh, I feel for you, eh? So sorry that you had to go through that, but it's turned you into the person you are today, you know, giving back and being able to have that perspective on life. But it must have been painful
you know, going through that. And it must have been so hard for your parents as well, you know, coming into America from the Philippines. That's a big move, you know, from another country. It's and obviously coming in and found it really hard. What age were you when you did come into the United States?
Well, I was actually born in California.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. my parents migrated over to the United States when before I was even born. Actually, my mother was pregnant when she migrated there. So the plan was to have me there so that, you know, I would get the U.S. citizenship, and then in turn that she would be able to sponsor herself and my father.
Sure.
So that was that's what happened.
Yeah. Sure. So what, some of those things that obviously you learnt about your childhood and your father and the influence on that, what are some of the things that, you know, maybe if you were to teach other people who are young coming through into that sort of age period now, or even adults who are, you know, in their 30s, 40s, who haven't figured it out yet, what are some of the things that you learnt about yourself and how your childhood influenced the person you became?
Mm-hmm. So some of the major things I learned about myself definitely was that, you know, of course, going through all of those, you know, my abusive father, the drug use that I put on myself, everything, is that I brought a lot of problems on myself. I brought a lot of things on myself and I couldn't deal with them. So then I turned to drug use and things like that to kind of drown that out. And what I've learned is that all of those obstacles and all of that, those adversities are actually lessons. And I learned that later on in life, of course, after the therapy and things like that, that those obstacles, whether it be big or small, those adversities, there's always lessons behind those. There's always something to learn, you know? Life is happening for us all the time. You know, every single time you look around, anything that happens, there's a lesson in that, you know. So, yeah, growing up, I didn't see those lessons. I didn't see that. I just saw hard times. I just saw, why is this happening to me? You know, I look around and I see other families. I see other friends. They got a father and mother. Why is my family not like that? You know, I was watching, you know, you watch TV. And you see the perfect family, a mother and father, everything is great. And I'm always thinking, why is my family not like that? Why am I not like that? You know, I always thought there was something wrong. Am I even supposed to be here? You know, why is my life not perfect? And I came to realize that all of those adversities and all of those things are hookups, you know, from the universe.
Yeah.
And we need to go through those. We need to go through all the adversity. We need to go through those. We need to look at everything as a lesson, and to go through those. And once you go through those lessons, you know, whether it be hard or whatever the lesson is, you look back and you see and you see, like, you know, sometimes those things weren't really as difficult as you thought, you know. And then you see that there is a lesson learned after you get through it. And it's like, you know, we're on to the next one, you know, on to the next one until eventually. You know, you get to where you're at, you know, to where you're at in life. And another thing that really helped me as well, too, is when I was in in the therapy program there in jail, they always focus on focusing on, like, imagining the person that you want to be in life, you know, imagine the person that you admire, the person that you want to be. And so I remember always thinking, you know, who I wanted to be, what kind of person that I want, you know, physically, mentally, my demeanor and things like that. And every day, you know, after I got out of that last stint in jail, whether it be big steps or small steps, I took steps to get to that person, you know. So ultimately, you have to have a goal. You have to see that person you want to be. You know, every day you wake up, you have to have that purpose of imagining that person that you want to be. And taking the steps to get there,
yeah.
You know, because I knew the person that I didn't want to be. And I think that's very important, too, in life. You know, sometimes there is no perfect plan, but we all know what we're not supposed to do, you know, and I think that's important. If you know what you're not supposed to do and not do that, then you will eventually find your path and know what you were supposed to do, you know?
Yeah. I love what you said about envision your future self, like know who you want to become, and when you can really feel uh-huh. like who you are when you're that person in the future, then, you know, that's when you're like, I've got to become that person, you know? Do you feel like before that last stint in jail, do you feel like maybe you didn't have that direction?
Yeah, I didn't have that because the person that I always looked up to was my father, you know? And so that was a person I was trying to be at that time. You know, I was trying to be him, his war stories, a little background of my father too. When he was in the Philippines, well, let me go back. His father was not the greatest father. I never met my grandfather, but his father was not the greatest father as well. From the stories I heard. So my dad kind of learned from him. And so my dad also, he had a lot of war stories that he would tell about in the Philippines, you know, and my uncles would tell me the same thing. He was big, even in the Philippines, doing hardcore drugs and things like that. He loved getting into fights. Actually, he got into trouble a lot, and they gave him an ultimatum. So my mom moved over to the United States first and was trying to bring my dad over. And my dad was there for a couple months, and he got into some really big problems there. And they basically gave him an ultimatum. He said that he was planning to go to it. So it was either jail or he was either going to get locked up in the Philippines or basically go somewhere else, you know. And he said that he was going to go to the United States to start a new life. And so they said, OK, if you leave, you can't come back from X amount of years. So he eventually migrated over to the United States. My mom brought him over. And so he was so bad over there. They basically said, you can't come back for X amount of years.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, that's, and he would, you know, these were his war stories. You know, he would tell me these things about how he got in the fights, the kind of drugs he did, how, you know, he would walk around. He would be the one that would be influencing people to try this drug or try that. You know, my mom would tell me this too. Like he influenced me to try this and that, you know, and they were all the same all the way around. And so that's what I looked up to. These are the stories that I would hear growing up. So I thought I needed to be like that, you know. But then I realized, you know, this is not the way. This, you know, it has to stop somewhere. And then so I started looking up to, you know, other people in my life. You know, I had uncles there that would help me out. You know, I was in martial arts too. So I looked up to my instructors and things like that. And you know, I just took little things from everybody, from the good people in my life, and I kind of made that person, you know. And, you know, at that time, it wasn't very clear of who exactly I wanted to be, you know, exactly. But I knew where the wrong path went, you know, and so I stayed away from that. When you know that where you're not supposed to be, then it's easier to find where you want to be. You know, you just got to stay off the wrong path, you know. And, you know, I'd be lying to you if I said I stayed on the right path the whole time after my last stint. I fell, but then I caught myself. The thing is, I had a conscience then, and I knew I was going down the wrong path. So, you know, I picked myself back up, you know. And eventually, after several good days, you know, having days, good days after good days after good days, you get in a stint of, you know, 90 days of good days and then 100 days. And the next thing you know, all of those things in the past are in the past, you know, and you're transforming yourself into that new person.
Awesome. Yeah, that's so cool. So can you tell me a little bit about why those first times, like how many times were you in jail, and why do you think those first times didn't have any impact on you? What was with the last time that made such a big difference for you?
Yeah, so to be honest with you, I can't even remember how many times I got locked up. It's more than a handful. You know, it was more than a handful of times from the age of 17 to 25.
Yeah.
But even before then, I was always getting in trouble. You know, I was like, even in school, I was always a class clown. I was the guy that was always skipping school. I was the guy that was wanting attention. I was the guy that the teacher would put his desk up in the front because I was always annoying everybody in the class. So I was always getting into some kind of trouble, yeah. You know. But from the age of 17 to 25, it's weird because it's just almost like a blur. It was so traumatic to me. It was kind of like a blur, but it was more than a handful of times. And those times, I don't think it was long enough. You know, it was like I was in, and then it was like my mother would bail me out. You know, she would take me out of there. She didn't want to see me there. And then it just wasn't long enough. And a lot of them were from drinking. You know, I loved to drink. That was my thing. And then I just lost all control after I drank, you know. And so I would do stupid things, you know. I would drink and drive. So I had a lot of, put it this way, before I was even 21 years old, in the United States, the legal drinking age is 21 years old. Before I was even 21, I got 3 DUIs. Before I was even the legal age to even drink, I got 3 DUIs. Another thing is, and this could be a good thing, I see it both as an asset and it could also be a bad thing, but I was very goal-oriented when I was young too. Like if I really wanted something, I would go out and get it no matter what the consequences, you know? So being that my family didn't have a lot of money and things like that, to get the things that I, you know, to purchase things and stuff, you know, I always saw like, oh, my friends have this and they have the latest Nintendo or what have you. And being I didn't have money, I would go out and get it. So I'd go out and steal it, you know. I would go out and just take it by any means, or I would sell something or steal something and sell it to get the money to gain that. You know, I would just try to, by any means, get whatever I wanted, you know. And like I said, that back then it was very bad because, you know, you want this or you would do anything to get it, no matter what the consequences.
Yeah.
Of course, now it's a different focus. You know, of course, I got things I'm focusing on, but, you know, you take the correct steps to get to that goal. You know, I think that's the biggest thing as well, too. I think going back to your question, I think the biggest thing was that the first couple stints in jail from basically getting caught stealing, drinking and driving, getting into a lot of fights publicly, and things like that were just not long enough for me. You know, they were just not long enough for me to actually think that I'm doing something wrong, you know. So the very last one, I wouldn't say it's the last one, but because all of the things that I did in the past since I was 17 kind of caught up to me. So the very last one was pretty bad. I was drinking and driving. Basically, I was drinking in a park with a bunch of friends and we were doing a bunch of drugs and we were leaving the park. And I just remember everybody was like, Carlos, don't drive. I was drinking actually Bacardi 151, which is pretty damn strong.
I know the one.
And we were leaving the park. We were drinking out in the park, you know, and they were like, Carlos, don't drive. And there was a little voice in my head that said, don't drive too. I think you should not drive this time. And I just didn't listen to it. I never listened to my conscience. You know, I just thought, whatever, conscience is weak. You know, I can do it. I got in my car, was driving, was actually racing my friends, you know, down one of the major roads in Virginia. And so there was a car that was parked or that was at a stoplight. And I smashed right into the back of this car, right? And I was like, oh, man. I put the car in reverse, my car in reverse, and I actually tried to leave the scene of the accident. My luck, there was a police officer right at the intersection. And it was just like the scene out of the Cops movie, right? So I tried it. I left the scene of the accident. The cop was right behind me following me, you know. They called the helicopter, and they were following me with the helicopter. They finally pulled me over, and, you know, they threw me in jail, you know. And so I was sitting there, and this was the third DUI. This was the third one. Okay, so there were two other ones prior to that. And there were some assault charges as well. And there were some, I was a thief. And so kind of all of these kind of caught up. The judge looked at me, and, you know, I think it was a blessing that I was young at the time. I was 20, turning 21 at the time. And I guess he saw something in me, but I was looking at doing it about 6 years in jail, six to seven years in jail at the time, with all of those things accumulated and all of that. you know, my mother really saved me on this one. She put her life savings in it and everything in getting me a really good lawyer. And also part of the deal was that I needed to go through this intense therapy program. I had to do a ton of community service. I had all this time above my head whenever I got out. And so I only had, out of the 6 years, I only had to do 6 months. So, you know, during those 6 months, I went through the therapy program and all that stuff. That's what happened. And I went through the therapy program and I got out. I did my community service. You know, I continued my path to being that person that I always saw in the future, you know, and staying away from the path of where I knew that it would take me, where my father went, you know?
Well, that's so lucky. And, you know, I'm glad that you've turned out, you know, and you've really worked on yourself and you're doing good now and you're giving back. But to go from 6 years to 6 months, that must have been a huge relief on your part. But I'm glad that was, you know, the time that you needed, you know, to get that impact on you. I definitely can relate with the, you know, the drinking side of things. Like, I'm a similar personality, I think. You know, when things got really tough one time, I used alcohol to really just try and not be here. Like, I was physically had to be somewhere, but mentally I didn't want to be there because it was so painful to be, you know, in the spot I was in, putting so much pressure on myself all the time. And drinking was a way out, you know, for a while. But yeah, it led to really bad things happening. And so when you can't control your actions, you know, and things happen, and it's like you sort of need that slap, hey, like a big slap to really knock you out of it.
Yeah. And I think the weakest point of a man as well, too, is that, you know, the weakest point of a man is when you lose control, you know. And I learned that too, you know, you really need to control yourself. And when you lose control, you're just showing weakness, you know, and that goes with everything, you know, when you lose control and you're influenced by outside sources and things like that. I think that's the weakest point, you know, so we definitely need to keep control of ourselves, you know. And when you're drinking and under the influence of things, you don't have control of yourself. And that's when you make the wrong decisions. You know?
Yeah. I think, I don't know if you can relate to, one of the big reasons for me was holding on to my emotions, like not ever accepting the feelings, like always pushing it down. No, I'm not angry. You know, I'm fine. I'm good. Like, I'm not angry. Like, and if you keep telling yourself that long enough, it just compresses and compresses. And I think that's a male thing. I don't know. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so too. I think that is, you know, showing your feelings and things like that. You know, that was something that my father too kind of like instilled in me, is don't show your emotions, don't show your feelings and things like that. You know, that's a sign of weakness is what I got. But, you know, eventually as I grew out of that, I found that, you know, you need to show your feelings. You need to express yourself, you know, because that's a form of communication. You know, and when all those things build up, you know, then eventually you're going to break. And when you get to that breaking point, you're going to explode, you know, and then you're going to lose control of everything, you know. So, I think it's definitely a male trait. And I think it's something that's wrong with society right now is teaching the youth, especially the young boys, to suppress their feelings, you know. That's still something I work on as well, right now, you know, is expressing my feelings and things like that. Sometimes I find myself sometimes expressing too much, to the point where it hurts people. And I think I need to sometimes think about what I say before I say them, especially when it's people that are very close to me. So I'm trying to find that balance, you know, of actually thinking about what I say before I say it, especially if it's going to offend people very, very close to me. But then again, you need to express yourself. Maybe I need to express myself differently, you know, or another. But yeah, definitely a self of expression and showing your feelings. I think that's definitely something that everybody should do. I think it's very important.
Yeah, I think like men and women now, because of social media, are putting more positive stuff online and believing these stories about their life that they put, you know, online. And they're not actually accepting the things that are actually painful. That's why we see a lot of teenagers and kids at the moment really struggling to regulate their emotions. And, you know, that's because a lot of the time it's like just say positive things on Facebook. Never put things or the social media, you know, like don't put any negative thing on there or everyone will blast you or, you know, just say what's wrong with you. Everyone else is going good, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But I just don't like arguing on social media. I think it's a waste of time as well, too, sometimes, you know. Because some of the things that people post on there, they would never say that when face-to-face.
Yeah.
So I think that's a different story as well, too. I mean, if you're going to say something there, make sure you really mean it. And make sure that, you know, if you're going to especially gear it towards somebody or something like that, that you would say that if they were there in the present moment, you know.
So have you got any things that you do now to regulate your emotions? Any activities, habits, things that you do?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Well, I've definitely been part of my therapy is that always it's personal development. You know, I think that we always need to invest in ourselves. Mm. Self-investment is a big thing. I think that's a big thing for me. And especially since this lockdown happened, this is, you know, the COVID-19 lockdown, you know, we all have a lot of free time on our hands. And, you know, it really depends on how you use the time. But I found that, you know, since this happened, I got a lot of free time. I really started investing a lot more in self-development. I mean, I have before, but more so now, you know, in self-investment. And things like that. So I think that's very important for people. I think everybody should invest a certain amount of time every single day to invest in self in every situation, actually, because everything's a learning experience. So you should be learning from every experience, every obstacle, every adversity. But I think that's a big thing. And that helps me because I know that I'm the type of person that sometimes, you know, that has anger issues. I have that, you know, stemming from when I was young. But yeah, there are some things that I definitely do. One thing that I do and is a big part of my life is I train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is one of the reasons that I'm here in Brazil. You know, I kind of followed my passion, my dream of coming to Brazil and actually training here in Brazil where it all started, which is kind of what brought me here. And I do that. I train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and that's where I really get a lot of I wouldn't say anger, but all of that energy you got built inside. I think it's a male thing as well, that we just have this energy. If you don't release this energy, physical energy, I think, you know, sometimes you may release it in another way that may be negative, yep. You know? And I think I think that's just a male trait. You know, we have this instilled in us where we have this energy. You know, if we look at back to the dawn of times, you know, we were the hunters, we were the gatherers and things like that. So we had a lot of physical energy. We need to release that. And so I do a lot of things. I do, you know, so I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's a big thing. But I also have a morning routine that I do. And that really helps a lot to get me focused, to really think about my day, to really think about things that I need to work on. And so I wake up very early, and I do a little, you know, I wake up very early. I have a time where I reflect and meditate on myself. I read something positive, you know, and then I go do my morning workout routine. You know, I have a workout routine other than jiu-jitsu that I usually do, you know, and it's something pretty intense. You know, something where you break a sweat and I really push myself, And that usually, you know, gets me the energy and gets my endorphins flowing to go through my day, you know. So I just try to really stay active. But I think if you have anger issues and things like that, I think, you know, I think the key is exercise and physical activity. I mean, you never see anybody after they're done doing something some physical activity or exercise, you never see them angry. You never really see them mad. You know, you just exert force and energy there. You know, I think it's almost impossible to be angry and mad after you're doing physical exercise.
Or so, you didn't do it. You didn't work out hard enough.
Yeah, you didn't work out hard enough. But yeah, I think that's definitely key, you know, physical activity, especially if you're, you know, a man, I think it's needed, you know, definitely.
Yeah.
And what also helps me as well, too, is my wife right now, she's a yoga instructor. So I do a lot of yoga as well, too, which helps, you know, internally. It also helps physically as well, too. But I just see myself turning more inside and really thinking about myself when I do that. I get concentrated more and stay more focused. You know, in myself, and so yoga definitely helps.
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
So with these, if we could break down these things that you do and how you feel they really help. Like we talked a lot about the energy in these intense workouts and how that creates the endorphins and you get a good feeling. How about the meditation and reflection? Like, how do you go about that? And what sources do you read the positive? Something positive, like where do you go to find that information?
Yeah, so we'll start with my morning routine here. So I usually wake up about 4:30 in the morning, you know, and I usually make a cup of coffee. I drink that. And then I usually go into some kind of reflection or meditation, you know, so I'll usually sit there. I have mats set up in my living, so I usually sit there in the lotus position. Sometimes I'll do some stretches and things like that just to get the blood flowing. But I usually sit in the lotus position and I just start reflecting on myself. You know, I just start really reflecting on myself. Especially the breathing. I concentrate on my breathing, and then usually after that, I usually read something positive, some positive affirmations or things like that. Like, for example, right now I'm reading Meditations by Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, so yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
I usually don't read a lot. So I'll read a couple of quotes or a couple of paragraphs, and I'll really just really absorb that, you know, because there's so much knowledge in that book. You know, you can't just go reading a whole chapter and just, you know, that's it, you know.
It's
so deep, you know. And one paragraph has so many lessons, and there's so many things to learn.
Yeah.
So I'll usually just meditate on that as well, and I'll reflect on that message.
Yeah.
You know. And so that's kind of what I do. Yeah, that's the book I'm reading right now of getting that. But, you know, it could be anything. I just try to pick something that's positive, something that's uplifting. And then I go into my workout. And the reason why I go into a really intense workout, it doesn't have to be super intense, but I try to push myself every day, you know, because I like to reach the point of that adversity, you know, of where your body says, you know, I kind of want to stop, you know, and that brings a point of adversity. And I believe that when you reach that, you still got 40%, you know, you've only reached 60% of your potential at that point, you know? So I try to get to that point, and then I try to push a little bit more, because I think a lot of things are mental. I think everything is really mental, you know? Like the saying goes in jiu-jitsu, 80% of jiu-jitsu is actually mental, you know, and only 20% is actually physical. And I really believe that. I think if you have a strong mental mind, then you can overcome anything, you know. And I think it reflects both ways. You know, I think that a healthy body is a healthy mind, and a healthy mind is a healthy body. I think those are mirrors, you know. So I think you really need to physically be healthy, and then in turn that will also help your mind, you know. So that is my morning routine, and that's what I do in the mornings to, like, I call them stacking victories, you know. So those are my victories in the morning, and then I try to go throughout my day and just keep on getting those victories in, you know. And that kind of makes the day go by. And then once you get all these days, when all these victories lined in place, then, you know, eventually, you know, you got winning days, and then you got winning weeks, and then you got winning months, you know, and that just leads to a better person, you know. Yeah. And of course, you have those days where, you know, you're not getting, you know, you say you're not getting wins. There's a lot of problems, you know, and issues that pop up. But then you got to turn around and you got to look at those issues and those obstacles as lessons, you know. So everything's a win. Everything's a victory if you look at it in that aspect.
Yeah, cool. So now that you've come from adversity and you've worked your way through and you've gone through the jail and you've come out and you've learned these skills and these routines and these practices and a positive life, what sort of advice would you give someone who might be struggling right now? Say if you look back at you when you were, you know, 17, 18 and you were to talk to yourself then, what would you say to, you know, younger Carlos?
Good question. So definitely I would say to myself is to embrace your adversities and embrace the things that are coming to you, you know, that those are all lessons, you know, and that everything in my mother used to say this a lot to me, that everything in life happens for a reason. I didn't see it at the time, you know, I didn't see all those at the time, but everything that's happening to you is for a reason, you know, and we need to embrace those adversities. We need to embrace all the obstacles and get through those. And you will see that at the end of the tunnel is not a train. You know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And that's another one my mom used to say all the time, you know, is that at the end of that at the end of the tunnel there is the light. And now I'm starting to see that, you know, now I'm starting to see that it's time to give back. It's time to pay it forward. It's time to tell my story, you know? And yeah, that's what I would tell my younger Carlos, you know, yeah. Is that just to embrace the struggles and to know that everything's happening for a reason. And another thing too, is that we're not alone, you know, we're not alone. I always thought when I was there that I was alone. Like I said earlier, you know, I would see other families and they would have, you know, father and mother, loving father and these things. And I always thought I was alone. I always thought that, why am I like this? Why am I the only one? You know, we are not alone. You know, there's other people going through the same struggles as you do and they've made it, you know, and that's what I'm trying to portray right now, you know, that you're not alone, that I've went through these things and that you can make it, that you can do it, you know? And so, yeah. And that's what I would tell my younger self.
Yeah. So if you say that the therapist at jail was such an influence on you and they helped you reflect on yourself and what you've done and where this pain came from, which may have caused all of these actions and outbreaks and all this stuff when you were younger, do you think if someone came to you when you were younger and said, hey, go and see a therapist or a psychologist, would you listen, do you think? Or do you think you'd have to go through the process?
No, I would not. Actually, I was told to before. I was told probably many a time, but I know on several occasions I was told, you know, you need some help. You have a drinking problem. You have a drug addiction problem. You have problems, you know? And I didn't listen. I just don't think it was time for me. I don't think it was time for me. And I was in denial, you know? So sometimes, you know, I feel like we should say, you know, especially if it's a close friend or something like that, or a family member, that we should definitely try to help them by saying these things and bringing the problems to the forefront. But initially it has to come from within.
Yeah.
You know, you have to know that you do have an issue, that you do have a problem. And I truly believe that sometimes sometimes people need to go through those issues, have to go through those obstacles to actually realize that you do need help, that you do need to look for an outside source, that you can't do it all by yourself, you know? And I just wasn't ready. It just wasn't my time then, you know?
Yeah.
And I think if you force someone to go into it, they're probably just going to go relapse, you know?
Yeah.
And whatever they were doing. And And that's happened in my life. You know, I had an uncle who was an alcoholic and this too. And we dragged him into the therapy program and it didn't help. He got out, he went out and he started doing the same thing over again.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely something that you just have to get tired of it. You know, you are going to learn the lesson when it's time for you to learn the lesson. And it's going to keep on coming over and over and over and over again until you actually just say, you know, I'm tired of this shit. You know, it's really time to learn this lesson and there has to be another way.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of sad that some people actually don't learn the lesson. But I think you need to be there for these people and always remind them that you're there for them. And especially if you've been through that trauma, to relate your story and to share your story and to support them until it is time for them to actually get help for themselves.
Yeah. I'd like to know, you know, I know that people come and they say that out of anger themselves, like you need help, you need to go see someone. You know, I don't know if that's the best way to talk to someone who's struggling, for one, because that's actually gets us more motivated to just, you know, stick it up them. So I wonder if like we had more positive influences like yourself now who can share, you know, the pain, the story, the journey, you know, and they look up to you, you know, and it's like, do you know, you could be better if, you know, you are more than this, you could do that, you know, in a really positive way. I just wonder if more people would, like you said, share their story and come out and be more of a mentor and positive influence.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. When you say things like that, especially if you're pointing, you need help and you need to do this, you put your defenses up. You're like, I'm not, you know, I'm nothing. You know, you don't talk to me that way, and your defenses go up and basically you're not listening to them. So I think the best thing to do as well too is to lead by example, you know, to lead by example, you know, and I think I'm in the position to do that, you know, because I've been in that position before. And I'm the type of person also, I don't like to say, you need to do this and you need to do that and you need to get up early and this and that, you know. I like to show by example. I like to lead from the front, you know. I've even seen this in my household here, just at home, you know, me waking up early, going through my morning meditations, going through my reflections and things like that. You know, I'm seeing this influencing people that I live with. And I never said anything like this to anybody that you need to wake up and do this. They just see you do it and they see results that happen. And then they start to think that, you know, that I can do that too, you know, because we're all not too different, you know, we're all not too different. You know, we all bleed the same blood. We all breathe the same air here. And so we're not all too different. What works for me can definitely work for somebody else in that position. You know, and that's something I'm trying to show as well too, you know, that you know, I'm not saying that I'm at the top of the mountain yet. I still see a lot of goals in front of me. I still see a lot of obstacles and adversities coming, and I'm embracing those just like I should have when I was younger, and that the advice that I would give the younger Carlos. But I know now that those are all lessons. You know, that those are the things that I need to get over to get to the top of the mountain. And I like to lead by example, you know, and I like to look at other people that have already been there and done that, you know, to get mentors in your life. You know, I think that's also important because we don't know everything, you know, we're not going to know everything, but there's somebody like just turn it around. You know, there's someone that's done that, you know, there's someone that's an entrepreneur that you want to be, that's made it, that's successful. So we need to look up to those people. We need to ask intelligent questions. We need mentors in our life.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that I was lacking as well too. And I think it was an ego thing, you know, as well too. Some people have big egos and they don't want to ask for help. And we need to put our egos down, you know, and be willing to ask for help. If you're not a professional, if you don't know something, to ask for help, to get mentors, someone that does.
Yeah.
You know,
so if someone is in a really hard position right now, they're getting caught up, you know, drinking drugs, behaving badly, getting in trouble, they've been told to go see a therapist, psychologist, whoever, and they're like, no, but now they're listening to this episode. What are some tips that you could give these people? It's all private. They don't have to tell anyone they've listened to this. What are some tips that you can give someone to get to that next stage to you know, get them to understand how positive it can be?
So I'm going to go back and I'm going to go back to what I said earlier is to picture that person that you want to be in life, you know, picture that person that you want to be in life and take the steps every day to get there, you know. If you can't picture that person, because obviously, you know, there's not a perfect plan, you know, you should do the things that you're not supposed to do. And we all know that. We all have a conscience, you know, so we all know what's wrong and what's right, you know, so stay away from the wrong, you know, that's one thing is we all know that we're all adults and we should stay away from what's wrong. And that will keep us on the right path. You know, even if we don't know what that right path exactly is, we know exactly what the wrong path is. So when we stay away from that, we're going to go down the right path eventually. And invest in self, you know, invest in yourself daily. You know, we need to take the steps to get to that person that we admire. And we need to take the steps to get to that daily. So we need to invest in ourselves every single day.
Oh, awesome. So could you share what it was like, if you feel comfortable, what it was like in jail? Is it pretty full on? Like, what is it like in jail with other people who are, you know, are you picking up bad things when you're in there? Is it like an education system for doing more bad? You know, when you stick around people, like, you know, more people, you sort of become that person. Is that sort of what you experience?
Yeah, so the first couple stints in and out of jail was they're all learning experiences, but it depends on how you look at it. So the first couple stints in jail, I was just looking for a better connection at, you know, getting drugs or finding secrets on how to break into things. And, you know, it really depends on who you associate yourself with. So, yeah, you imagine you're in a facility where there's a lot of bad influences there. And if that's what you're looking for, then there's a wealth of knowledge in there for you, you know, to do really bad things, you know. But what really got me is when I went into the intense and into the therapy program there, there was a lot of people there that I saw too, you know, it was a mixture of people. So there were people in there with, like, you know, doing a lot of time. I was mixed in there with people that were doing a lot of time, like 25, 30 years, you know. There were people in there from simple drug charges to people that were killers and murderers, to people that were, child molesters and things like that. And they were all in the same room. From there, I learned a lot from those older guys in the intensive therapy program. Because when I got in there, I was still fairly young. I got in there when I was 21. And so there were a lot of older men in there. And they were in my face, you know, they were like, what are you doing in here? You're 21 years old. You got the whole life in front of you. You know, you don't want to be like me. Look at me. I'm doing like 40 years. You know, there were drug addicts in there and they were saying, you know, I sold my body. I sold my family to get drugs and things like that. You don't want to be like me. And that's what really hit me. You know, I was looking at these older guys, these older men, and I was like, man, you're right. I don't want to be in here. You know, some guys were in there. They were in there. You know, I'm in my 20s. So some guys were, you know, in late 30s, 40 years old. They had families. They had careers. They had jobs. And they lost everything. You know, that's why I'm saying it was kind of a blessing for me to go in at such a young age. Because, I lost some things. But I did not, some of these guys, they lost families. Like I said, you know, they sold their soul. Mm. You know, they sold their soul for pleasure. And that really changed me. And then I was looking at them and they actually became my mentors. You know, I was thinking, you know, I don't want to be stuck in here. I don't want to be going through the same cycle until I'm 30, 40 years old. You know, I don't want to lose my family. I don't want to sell my body, my soul for this drug or for just for pleasure, you know? And, so yeah, there's two sides to that, you know, and it really depends on you. You can go in there and be looking to prove yourself and to gain knowledge on how to be a better criminal, which was my first couple stints in jail. That's what I was doing, you know, And then the last one was definitely something different. You know, it was looking at the men in there and seeing what they have done and learning from their mistakes, you know, and learning and turning the page on myself, kind of like what I did with my father, you know, of not being like him and not going down the same path as my father, and looking at these men and saying, you know, they're telling me, you know, their mistakes and things like that, and telling me that, you know, what the wrong path is, and they're showing me examples of the wrong path. And I knew exactly where I didn't want to end up, you know. So I flipped the script on myself, you know, and I told myself, yeah, that's not where I want to be in 30, 40 years from now. So yeah, to answer your question, it really depends on your outlook on that. It can go both ways, you know.
Yeah. No, some strong words there, man, and good that you've picked up on the negative influences that, you know, help motivate you to not be like that, how bad it could become, you know, if you keep going down that route. And yeah, that's pretty powerful stuff. So I'd like to jump.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, it's not just in there as well, too, not just in jail or prison or anything like that, but I think on the streets as well, too. You know, there is more structured, but here, even out on the streets or in the free world, you have to have the same discipline. I mean, you can go looking for the bad influences in life too and hang around that crowd, or you could be looking for the good influences and the mentors and the that type of influence too. So what it all boils down to is what you really want, you know, what you really want inside, the kind of person that you want to be, you know. So it doesn't really matter if you're locked in jail with a bunch of criminals and things like that, or if you're out in the free world. You know, it's, you have access to everything, you know. So yeah, it kind of boils down to that.
Yeah. Law of attraction. I was talking to someone else today about, it's like, if you're thinking about it, you're believing it, that's what you want. Like you're saying, vision that future self with that positivity and all the good things that could come, you become that. If you think about all of the drugs and alcohol and all that, you want that, and that will come. Like,
yeah, exactly. Funny you say that. Because I was just reading a verse today in meditations, and one thing that stuck out with me is being and becoming. To be and then you will become.
Yeah.
You know. And so being is every day going through those processes, and then you will eventually become. You know. And that definitely stuck out. So it was, what a coincidence you said that.
Yeah.
But that's exactly. It is.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So you talked also about your reflections. So when you're reflecting, meditating and reflecting in the morning, for someone that's never done any reflections, could you give a little bit of a framework? Say someone's like, I want to do reflections. What is a reflection? How do I do it? Is there some sort of framework that someone could take away from today and just go and give that a go? What are the sort of questions you ask yourself?
I don't really ask myself questions in the morning. So I usually just turn in, you know. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm sitting there, I kind of reflect on, you know, on what happened the day before, kind of, and all the lessons, kind of what went on yesterday and things like that, and how I can improve and be and improve today. So I'll sit there and I'll be meditating. And I'll be thinking about, so what happened kind of like yesterday, and I'll turn inwards, and then I'll think about today, and then I will think about how can I improve myself in those things that I think that I did yesterday. Because that's what it is. You know, I feel like it's a constant state of progression. Your life should be a constant state of progression, you know. And so that's kind of what I do. You know, I kind of reflect on the day before, and then after that I reflect on today, the present time, and how I can improve on the Carlos from yesterday.
Yeah, totally. So that's so good, because, you know, a lot of people don't reflect and they don't actually understand, you know, what they could improve on. You know, they don't know, they can't see the other side, you know, so they don't know that they could be a better person if they actually saw that they didn't do something as best they could the day before.
Yeah, we always got to be looking for improvement. You know, we always got to be looking to improve ourselves from the day before. And that's what it's all about, you know. You know, like I said earlier, you know, progression. That's what life is all about. It's always progressing. Because if, you know, you're either progressing in life or you're regressing in life, you know. And if you stay at the same level, if you're just staying stagnant, that's death. You know, you don't want to stay stagnant. So for me, it's progression. And to progress, to be a better person today than I was yesterday, you need to reflect on that. You know, you need to look at what happened yesterday. And then today, reflect on how we're going to improve, even if it's just little baby steps, you know, even if it's just little baby steps. Another thing that I do, too, is after I'm done reflecting, I usually like to journal my thoughts and things like that. So I have a little journal that I keep as well, too. And especially after the reflection and things like that, I like to write those things down, you know. So then eventually, you know, you could always refer back to them and see your growth. And that's always important, because if you're just reflecting and then improving, and you don't see your growth. Some people can probably, but for me, what helps is just journaling and then going back. Like I'll flip my journal back to like a week or a month, and I'll just read, and I'm like, wow, this is how much I've grown in a month, you know, or a week. And that's like a pat on the back for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and that keeps you motivated. You know, that's like, okay, I can do more, and then eventually, you know. You get to that point, you're getting closer to that man that you admire, you're getting closer to that person, you know. So that's just showing your improvement. So I think that's very important, too, is reflecting on what you did yesterday and then improving on what you did the day before today at the present moment, and then journaling that, you know, putting it down on paper or some documentation so that you can see your improvement, because that will keep you going.
Yeah.
You know.
Cool. So what's life in Brazil like now compared to the United States?
Well, we've been on lockdown for almost 2.5 months, almost 3 months here.
Yeah.
But, you know, the good thing about it over here is we live on an island, like I said, off the coast of Brazil. So we're kind of like isolated. And in Florianopolis, it's known to be the best quality of life. In South America, one of the best qualities of life. So everybody here is always active, which kind of attracted me over here too. Everyone's active. You always see people outside running around, doing something physical, you know, everything like that. You know, surfing is a big thing here too. You know, of course, it's an island, so there's a lot of beaches, a lot of nature. And so it's very beautiful here. And the good thing about that is that I think 2 weeks ago they stated that because of what I said, that kind of helps people with their mentality, and it also helps with their immune system. So we have the lowest count of the COVID-19 infections here in this part of Brazil.
Yeah, right.
But I can't say the same for the other parts, like São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro, you know, where there's a lot of people, people in one place and things like that. So it's, you know, overall here is good, but in other parts of Brazil, it's not so good as far as the COVID-19 virus thing goes. You know, and also there's a lot of political things. I don't know if you saw the news lately. I don't really watch the news, but they're saying that there's a lot of political things here. They're not really taking the virus very seriously here. You know, the president isn't taking it very seriously here. It's kind of like, it's just the flu. It's just a hard case of the flu. So it's kind of dividing the people here, you know, but I just look at the whole thing is that I think there's a big learning experience for this, you know, internally, for everybody, you know. I think this is a time for people to reflect on themselves and to really find out what's important in their life, you know. And I think after this whole epidemic is over and things like that, I think I really do believe that change is going to happen, and it's going to change in a better way. So
yeah, no, I believe that as well. And it's incredible, like, how much an environment makes a difference in your life as well. We've just been traveling a lot last year and living away from our home base. Like, I lived in Perth, Western Australia, all my life up until we, you know, disconnected from Perth and we moved to Indonesia for 3 months and then to the eastern states of Australia. But the transientness and the movement and, you know, not finding the place that suited us as a family, and it made a big difference, hey? Like, so finding a place that you resonate with and you get inspired by, I think that's really important. So I'm glad that you've got that there.
Yeah, definitely. I think the environment has a lot of, the environment that you live in has a lot to do with, with yourself, with your personality and things like that as well too. So, everybody should definitely find a place where you feel at home, and I definitely do feel at home here. I mean, I didn't mention this, but right now I have the opportunity to basically live anywhere in the world that I want. I do all my work online. So it's 100%, I'm 100% remote. And I came back to this part of Brazil 3 times, so that just shows you how much I really love this place. And the third time I was like, we're getting a house here. This is where we're staying. But I had the opportunity to experience other parts of the world and live in other parts of the world. And this is definitely one of the ones that was at the top of my list. And so, yeah, definitely find that place where you feel home, find that place where you feel comfortable. And if you don't have that opportunity, you could always find that place of comfort within yourself, because when I was going through those adversities and things like that, sometimes the only place you can go to find happiness or find comfort is within yourself, if you don't, turn inward and find that peace within yourself. I definitely do believe that all our answers to all of our questions is already within us, we just got to have the open mind and listen to our conscience to actually hear those answers,
Yeah, definitely. So do you have kids now? Do you have kids and a wife, you said earlier?
Yes. So my wife is local here. She's from this island, and I have 3 kids with her. So I have a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 16-year-old. So
cool. So what do you hope to pass on to your kids? What are some of the values and beliefs you hope to pass on?
So that's something that's very interesting, because I also teach the kids jiu-jitsu class. It's a big inspiration for me to teach the kids class there. And so there's a lot of things that I like to pass on. I feel like I went through all these things in my life so that I can pass them on and eventually, change people's lives, So a lot of the things that one big thing that I'm instilling in my kids right now is to be not afraid to learn. That when you start something, when you want to learn something, in the beginning, it's always going to be hard. There's always going to be some difficulties. I always related, because both of my kids know how to ride a bicycle now without the training wheels. So I always kind of related to that, learning how to ride a bike is basically learning how to learn. And I think that's very important for people, that no matter what age you're at, no matter where you're at in life, you've got to constantly be learning, and to have the mindset to learn, you always have to have the beginner mindset, and you always have to know that when you begin something and to learn something, that in the beginning, there's going to be obstacles, there's going to be adversities, there's going to be a point where, you're going to hit a point where you want to quit, where you want to stop, but once you get over that point, then that's where the actual learning happens. That's when you start progressing in this skill or whatever you want to learn. And that's something I'm trying to instill, that I'm instilling in the kids that I teach and in my students. Like jiu-jitsu is very difficult. Of course, when you start, it's very physical. It's very mentally taxing as well. So there's always, even right now, I'm a black belt in jiu-jitsu, but there's always points where I get to where it's like, wow, I always reach points where it's difficult, but I know that once I get over this point, I'm not trying to learn this new position or this new move. It just takes practice. You got to do it over and over again, repetitiously, you know? And so that's what I'm trying to instill in my kids too. You know, I see them in my students, you know, I see them, I teach a new move or I show them something new, and you see it in their faces that they want to quit. It's too hard, you know, sometimes. But then I always related to riding a bike, you know, like, you know, you start with the training wheels on, you know? And then so, and then after that, we take the training wheels off, and then a lot of times you're going to fall, you're going to get hurt, you know, but you got to pick yourself back up, you know, and you got to keep on going forward. And then eventually you'll be able to ride on two wheels, you know? And my kids can always relate to that, you know? And so, yeah, that, I think that's very important. And that's something, a major thing I try to instill in my kids and my students is that continue to learn. You know, if there's something that you really want to do or really want to learn, you can do it. You know, you just got to, first of all, take that first step and continue going. And when things get hard, or the difficulties come, know that those are learning lessons and get over that obstacle. And then eventually you will learn this skill or this movement, and then it's on to the next one, you know? And I think that's very important in life, you know, cause, you know, it's progression, and that's life right there.
Yeah. So good. And, my kid's been going to jiu-jitsu here in Byron as well. So,
oh, excellent. Cool.
Yeah. They're 3 and 6. So it's awesome watching my little son run around. He just runs around the mat.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And he gets right into it. He loves it, rolling around.
Nice.
So thanks so much for your time, Carlos. That is, you know, your story is so inspirational. I'm so glad and thankful that you've come on and shared this with everyone. If you've got one message to give away and you hope that your story, you know, brings to people, what is that one thing?
Embrace your adversities and embrace all the obstacles in life. That's what I would say to anyone that's listening right now. Those are lessons, all of those, you know, when things get tough and things get difficult, to embrace those, to learn from those. Don't pick up the bottle. Don't pick up anything that's going to suppress those feelings. Go through them, absorb them, and go through them. They're all happening for a reason. You know, and you'll find that reason out once you get over that. Once you get over that adversity or that obstacle, you'll know why. But we need to always embrace the obstacles and the adversities in our life. And that's what I would, that's the message that I would like to share with everybody. You know, it's just to concentrate on those.
Awesome, man. And everything else you said tonight and today, it was so good. So thank you so much for all your time and your experience and your story and your message. Thanks so much.
Greg, I appreciate it. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on your show and to share my story. I really do appreciate that.